Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have to confess to you, I have a special treat for you. I get excited about having guests on, but the gentleman I have on the line with me is one of my favorites. I provide advice to people, and they look to me as an expert. This gentleman is who I look to for insight into, especially the global economy and the markets, the action on Fed Reserve policy and currencies, interest rates, and oh my gosh, it goes on and on. Leo Haviland is our guest. He has written the book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. He writes ongoing essays that are very insightful, and if you haven't taken a look, please do. LeoHaviland.com, H-A-V-I-L-A-N-D, LeoHaviland.com. He is a graduate University of Chicago and Cornell Law School, 3 decades of experience on Wall Street in the trading environment. He's worked for Goldman Sachs, and his research covers the gamut from stocks, interest rates, to foreign exchange, commodities, just all sorts of great stuff. So we're super excited to have Leo back on the program as returning guest. Leo, welcome.
Thanks very much, David. It's an honor to be on your fine show.
Thank you very much, sir. And I meant every word of that because I love your insights. And there have been several things that you've written of late that are just so spot on and relevant for where we are in this world. And I have about 6 hours of questions that we're going to cram into 27 minutes.
I'll do my best.
You ready? Okay. So in no particular order, let me get your thoughts on this. And I will start with kind of what I know is going to be a naive question, but here it is. Greece, why won't or why doesn't the Eurozone just say, you're out? In other words, go ahead and bite the bullet, pay the piper, let them out, or not agree to keeping them in and doing another deal and another deal and another deal, and pay a cost now versus over the next 10, 20 years continue to pay a cost that I see as greater than just letting it happen all at once now. Tell me how I've got it wrong, or what are the consequences of that?
You've asked an excellent question, David. First, there's arguably a legal issue within the various European treaties about whether a country such as Greece actually can leave. Not that it's necessarily an Abraham Lincoln moment of what the southern states could ever secede, but it's akin to that.
Okay, that's a good analogy.
Second, if Greece left, there might be pressure for other nations at some time to also leave. And the European experiment is very much a political one, not simply an economic one.
Yes.
So there's great reluctance to have any severe fracturing, much less departure of nations within it. You raise an excellent point, too, David, about why not bite the bullet. And I suspect that you and many of your listeners would say, if Greece were even a close family member, why on earth would you give them any more money?
Okay, that's a great analogy. Well, it's just an obvious question. We see all of the things that are happening, and it just makes you wonder. You know, I can see your point, and it's very, very well taken, of if they did let Greece, or Greece chose, or they come to an agreement and they're out, then what would stop maybe the next country from saying, you know, we think we'd be better also leaving? And of course, Greece is one of the smaller ones compared to, I don't know who would be next, but somebody like an Italy. I mean, good grief, that would be a major, major succession.
Right. And within the European zone, there's the issue of budget discipline, even for those who really intend to stay in. So if Greece leaves, maybe there's going to be nations that want to run a greater budget deficit than around the 3% target for an extended period of time. Or others may say, and Italy here is a case, that, well, we have well over 100% indebtedness relative to GDP. Well, we're probably not going to bother to pay that back. Look at Greece.
Mm.
And so that, even within a political Union undermines the budget discipline, which is integral to the various treaties, and of course, which, as you know, Germany in particular cares a great deal about.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if you look forward, Leo, is their role always going to be kind of the stern parent in this equation?
Excellent metaphor. They suffered through such terrible inflation and its consequences many decades ago that stern parent does fit them. But they're not alone. The Finns support them. And to some extent, many of the other nations who, at least when they point to Greece, say, my gosh, that's a very wayward child.
Mm. Well, that's another good metaphor. Speaking of the Eurozone, with some of what they've been doing, and you mentioned the inflation, they, of course, have had real concern. At least this is what I'm hearing or hearing the music about deflation, and they have, of course, started their own rounds of quantitative easing. How far into that are they? Is this something that they've just really started? Because I think a lot of people aren't really aware of how far along and what the actions they've taken. Is that moving along, and are we seeing any benefit? I know that you have some concerns in some of the things I've read that it may not give them the boost that they really think that they might be able to get out of it.
They began initial stages of quantitative easing several months ago with acquisition of asset-backed securities and covered bonds. But they've extended that wonderful process by, in very recent months, agreeing to purchase government bonds in the secondary market. So this government bond purchasing is akin to the money printing efforts of the Federal Reserve Bank and the Bank of Japan.
Right, right.
Now, they're just getting underway because they plan to do many billions of this a month until roughly mid-year 2016. So the consequences for the overall economy remains to be seen, but optimists, and I think the optimists are those who are either hoping for growth or hoping for sustained stock market rallies, would probably tout this as a wonderful event.
You aren't in that camp, are you?
No, it's important to build confidence, and certainly in the early stages of the financial crisis in 2009, 2010, and arguably also to protect the banking system, that was helpful. But if one imagines a game of Monopoly, and all of a sudden the central banker of the game floods the board with a bunch of dollar bills and euros and so forth, that doesn't make the participants over time any richer.
Good point. It may
inspire them to spend more. It may boost their confidence. And so for a while, that may improve real GDP growth. But I don't know how that solves underlying issues of indebtedness, leverage, and so forth that maybe were endemic to the board game.
Very, very good point, because if I were playing the game, I would say, okay, we got more money than... Okay, I'm going to outbid you on that property, but has that really changed anything in terms of, you know, the long-term growth?
It makes a great opportunity for those who are, to use the Wall Street term we both know, in at the right time and
right.
Who can get out in time.
Right, right. Well, and speaking of that, that's, of course, another big subject that we need to delve into, Leo, and we'll grab a quick break. We'll come back and talk about where the U.S. market is, and we are getting long in the tooth, if you will, for the current bull market. So let's talk about that. Leo Haviland, ladies and gentlemen, leohaviland.com. And the book is Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. And we'll be right back after this quick break.
Here's a newsflash. All financial advisors are not created equal. Some invest in their education by getting advanced degrees and professional certifications. Some don't. Some advisors get multiple licenses and offer a wide range of solutions. Some don't. Some advisors choose to be independent. Some don't. Some advisors disclose how they are paid and the fees they charge. Some don't. Please don't settle for a don't. Let me introduce you to independent advisor David Holland. David is a CPA, a certified financial planner, a personal financial specialist and a chartered financial consultant. With 23 years financial experience, David offers a wide range of personalized solutions and discloses all fees in writing. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, with one of my favorite guests, Leo Haviland. LeoHaviland.com. Leo is a wealth of information, including writing a book, Words on the Street, Language in the American Dream, on Wall Street. And we're very, very happy to have him back. And you know, the current bull market, Leo started, you know, the bottom, of course, for the downturn, greatest recession impact on the markets was March of 2009. And we have been on what I think is clearly a bull market for, what is it, we're coming up on 6 years. Bull markets don't go on forever, right?
That's true. The biblical analogy of 7 years of famine and 7 years of plenty doesn't necessarily fit with equities, even U.S. equities, but it's certainly been a remarkable advance.
Well, so we have those seven fat cows, and the concern, of course, is that they will be consumed by seven skinny cows, and there obviously is... The only thing that will be the same about this time around is it will be different again.
You're absolutely right. We should be, of course, watching the corporate earnings, which up to this time have been on balance for the U.S., and you know a great deal about this, David, have been rather good. But there are other market considerations to keep in mind to decide whether or not the rally is either ending or at least showing signs of consolidation.
Right.
One would be significantly higher interest rates in the United States and, of course, overseas. And there's been a bit of a rise in rates, but not dramatic yet. But probably more significantly has been the rally in the trade-weighted dollar over the past several months, which is... we both recall tied very closely into the decline in U.S. and other equities around the world.
Yes, that's true. And I was going to ask you maybe if you, because I get this question, and I'd like for you to give me kind of the best way you think I should answer it, and that is, why is the dollar so much stronger? I mean, why has it gotten so much stronger? It's because our economy and our system seems to be that we're the strongest of the weak, or is there something else in play?
We probably are the strongest of the weak, or at least the relatively weak, or the relatively strong, depending on whether you like saying the glass is half full or half empty. Second, however, the nations around the world have quietly been engaged in competitive depreciation.
Okay.
And the Japanese and the euro area seem right now to be more inclined to depreciate than the United States had been. We were quite willing to, at least through 2011, 2012, and at least the early stages of the next year or more. But now we're not as inclined to depreciate. And that is a factor in the mix right now.
Okay. The other thing, Leo, about the economy, and you mentioned the earnings, which of course are very important, and we'll have to watch those carefully, and of course the earnings estimates and how, how low they are and whether how easily these companies can exceed or beat estimates. The fundamental, though, ultimately, fundamentals matter. I mean, ultimately, our gross domestic product and how much our economy grows, despite the easier money policy and the quantitative easing and all this stuff and action by the Fed, ultimately it is going to be the underlying economic growth. Haven't those estimates been revised downward by IMF, International Monetary Fund, and expectations?
Yes, the IMF revised down worldwide growth substantially, especially in the emerging marketplace developing nations. And if one also reads the fine print of the Federal Reserve's economic projections, although in the next year or two they have relatively sunny growth estimates, their mystical long-run economic projections are, say, 2 to 2.3 or 2.5%, not nearly as strong. And the willingness of readers and economic and political masters to downplay the IMF downward revisions or the Fed's not-so-bullish long-run projections is very interesting.
It is, especially when we see this mix of commentary, and I'm not a conspiracy guy, but it seems a little too convenient that we have an ongoing quote-unquote debate within the Federal Reserve about when and if and all that about raising rates. I think they're going to have. I just don't see it as being imminent, and I'd be curious to know what you think, Leo. I just don't see rate increases being imminent. Because the risk is that they put us back into, you know, some downward pressure, especially in light of those revised downward economic growth GDP numbers. I just don't know. I don't want to say my gut, but my perception is that I just don't see them raising rates maybe as quickly as some of the noise might imply.
They are not in a hurry. In a race between the tortoise and the hare, I think the tortoise seems very much this particular Fed's standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
They have wedded themselves to an effort to maintain confidence. And the confidence means not only the declining unemployment rate, but also high equity prices. And they'd also like the housing market to go up some more. And, you know, they're not in a hurry to do anything to cause a perception of economic weakness. Now, that being said, David, if it makes such a big difference to raise rates 25 or 50 basis points, how strong is the economy?
Exactly. And to use your analogy of the tortoise and the hare, I actually think the tortoise is he's walking along and the hare is stretched out on his back getting some sun, because I just don't see those. And again, I'm not a conspiracy guy, but I almost feel like reading the minutes or seeing the headlines or, you know, this member of the Federal Reserve or that member, they'll have these different opinions. And it seems to be a little bit like a couple boxers pretending to have a personal grudge when to maintain the show.
Excellent analogy, yes.
Well, now here's a more fundamental question as we talk about the U.S. and its place in the world. Aren't we supposed to be, or this may just be a U.S.-centric perspective, but aren't we supposed to be the one of the key economic drivers in our world given the relative size of our economy?
We're certainly crucial, but of course not as crucial as we were 30 years ago or certainly after the end of the Second World War. In a much more interdependent economic system, what goes on with China, who's, mm-hmm. you know, over 20% of, say, our trade-weighted dollar, a key trading partner.
Sure.
Japan and the euro area and associated nations matter. So some of the easing to refocus on the central banks by the European Central Bank and the continued money printing of Japan does carry over and help here. And every time one thinks that, say, the Chinese might be trying to do something about shadow banking or easy money policies, they backtrack on it and let their particular party keep rolling forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
the interdependent world makes it very difficult for the United States to escape from the policy decisions elsewhere.
That's a very good point. That it is. We are all in it together. But at the same time, each country, each region, each force is trying to position themselves. And again, that's exactly what we have with some of the challenges that the Eurozone faces in the common currency, but not a common political structure. Leo Haviland, ladies and gentlemen, always insightful. We're going to grab another quick break. We'll come right back and talk. I want a couple more questions about the U.S. dollar. Stay right there.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Then maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary. What's a fiduciary? That's a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. Being a fiduciary also means that the advisor should recommend the products and services he believes will best serve his clients' needs, not what an insurance or investment company tells him he has to sell. So next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, are you a fiduciary? The answer should only be yes or no. If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer is probably no. This public service announcement has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we are back. Leo Haviland on the line. Leo has written the book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street, leohaviland.com. And Leo writes a lot of great essays that I am very pleased to read and be able to ask him about. And I wanted to come back just for a moment, if we could, Leo, about the dollar. We talked about some of the things that are driving the dollar's strengthening. And let's jump in our time machine and go back to the introduction of the euro. That was that back at the beginning of the 90s?
Really more the end of the 90s.
Okay, end of the 90s. Okay. And when it first was introduced, correct me or clarify for me, when it was introduced, wasn't it introduced at parity with the dollar, or was it some other multiple?
I don't recall if it was at parity with the dollar, but after it was unleashed, it's shown over the long run a gradual strengthening despite
right.
the weakness in recent months.
Right, and that was, I remember it. In fact, I was on a trip to Italy, and the euro had spiked, and I was like, oh, shucks, because my dollars didn't go as far. But so we're seeing this recent weakness, and of course, the dollar strengthening significantly against the euro. What is your thought or expectation about some of the longer-term trends that we may see? Is it going to stay more of where it is now, where the dollar has a relatively stronger position, or could it go back the other way, like when I was on my trip? It was like $1.70 or so to buy 1 euro. What do you think about long term?
Signs point, at least for the foreseeable future, to a somewhat stronger dollar.
Okay.
First, the United States economy continues to show a little bit more growth than many nations, mm-hmm. and there's been the revision downward of expectations for the emerging and developing nations.
Okay.
Second, for whatever a trend is worth, the trade-weighted dollar, as of its most recent month of calculation, January 2015, is approaching a level where it reached in October 2008, and it eventually went through that with some rather dire consequences for the international economy. Second, the United States seems to not be speaking very much about depreciation of other currencies against the dollar, which is a sign that on the political side, our leadership will for now countenance a somewhat stronger dollar.
Okay.
And lastly, on some key trade-weighted measures, the Brazilian real, the ruble, the Indian currency, and the South African currency, on their various trade-weighted basis or effective exchange rates, have weakened against the rest of their trading partners.
Okay. Interesting. Well, so you spoke a moment ago, to Leo, to the downward revisions and expectations for some of the developing countries. Is that in large part due to more of a commodity-driven economy for those countries?
Excellent point, David. For some of them it is, the lower oil prices in particular. But it may also be a sign that demand from their trading partners, the advanced nations, is less than many think.
Okay.
And in the case of China, and one has to wonder how much even the Chinese authorities know about what's going on throughout their nation. Those downward growth estimates may be a sign that all their money printing and easy credit and so forth has substantially run its course.
Okay. So they're certainly, if you look around the world, Leo, we've been talking about some of the concerns. Any bright spots that you see that you say, hey, look, these guys got it, they're doing it right, or here's some fiscal responsibility, or here's some positive things? Anybody of note or notable to you?
Certainly the world has, in the case of the United States, shown some signs of growth over the past several quarters. The lower oil prices, if they're sustained, will be helpful.
Yes.
The fiscal responsibility for the U.S. in the near term, of course, and that, of course, captures the headlines, things are not as dreadful with U.S. budget deficits at, say, 2.5% of GDP on the federal level are not all that dreadful. So debt's not getting any worse. So if you want to say a bright spot for the U.S. and elsewhere, debt's not getting any worse or much worse. I suppose if you want to view that as sunny, and it is.
Yeah. Well, relatively speaking, right? I mean, well, and we also are not shedding a million jobs a month like we were at the height of the financial crisis and the greatest recession back in 08, 09, that time frame. What about our northern friends, Canada?
They probably did not suffer until recently nearly as much as many other countries around the world because of the boom in commodity prices.
Right, right.
So the downtrend in commodity prices, which you can see reflected in the depreciation of the Canadian dollar in part,
right,
shows that their economy has slowed somewhat. And Mexico down south, showing similar concerns.
So it really is, always a compared to what view of looking at these different economies and how their stocks are performing. I did a kind of a 12-month back view, looked in the rearview mirror, looking at some of the countries that performed the best in from a stock market index, their indices, Leo, and China ended up being the strongest for 2014. Year to date, I think we're looking at Italy, and of course, that can all change very quickly, but it's all this relative performance really is interesting to me, and it certainly makes a strong case for diversification, doesn't it?
It sure does. You make a good point, David.
I've had people say, well, golly, why should I just put all my money into the S&P 500 and call it a day? And some of the things we've talked about are certainly strong reasons why not to do that you really do need to have something besides that big bowl of sugared cereal for a well-balanced breakfast.
You're right. You have to have the breakfast of champions like you, David.
Well, you're kind, Leo, and we're glad to have you with us. Leo Haviland, ladies and gentlemen, leohaviland.com is the website. Go there, check out some of Leo's essays, which are very insightful and very to the point. Concise, by the way, too, Leo. Thank you for that. And we're very glad to have Leo on the line, leohaviland.com, and the book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. Leo, you have a standing invitation to come back anytime you would like, sir.
Thanks very much for having me on your show, David.
It is my pleasure.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.